Welcome back to Camden Cast, your unofficial Baltimore Orioles fan podcast from CamdenChat.com. I'm your host, Mark Brown, and we are recording this episode on April the 9th, 2015, in the evening. The Orioles are 2-1 after taking 2 out of 3 against the Tampa Bay Rays in the season opening series. And we do have a little bit of news today, which we will talk about later, as the Orioles traded Ryan Webb to the Dodgers. And they also gave up a draft pick. But again, we'll get to that later. I'm joined once again by Alex Conway. Alex, how's it going?
It's going pretty good tonight, Mark. How you doing yourself?
Probably not as good as I'd be doing if the Orioles had managed to sweep the Rays or, you know, score any runs at all on Wednesday night. But, I try and tell myself, well, if they win 2 out of 3 and they do that the whole year, you know, that's 108 wins, so that'd be pretty good.
Yeah, you know, I never sort of expect a sweep, you know, because most of the teams in the major leagues are sort of a representative major league team. It's hard to win 3 in a row against somebody. And so, you know, as long as you win the series, I'm happy. But I would have preferred a better performance or at least a more entertaining game in that third game.
Much as Gary Thorne and others tried to call it a pitcher's duel. It's not a pitcher's duel just because it's low scoring.
No, it's just low contact and boring.
That was one of those games where you watch that and you're like, man, can we just like stop steroid testing forever?
Yeah. Bring back steroids. It was more fun.
Just jam them in everybody's butts. Like, just get whatever you can. Just bring back offense.
It also always sucks to lose before you got the off day, because then you just got the sour taste in your mouth.
That's true, too. All there was to do was think about Brian Mattis coming in out of the bullpen and walking two guys to...
I'd nearly forgotten about it.
...to walk in a run. The first run of the game, wasn't it? Or was that the second run?
Whatever. Yes, it was. Yeah. Yes, it was the first run of the game.
Which, of course, dinged Miguel Gonzalez's ERA instead of Brian Mattis's.
Although Brian Mattis or Miguel Gonzalez did walk the last two of his batters, so the Orioles had walked 4 in a row to walk in a run.
What is that? That's the Rays too. The Rays aren't even supposed to have a good offense. Just
no.
Let them swing.
They did appear to have patient hitters at the very least, but I wouldn't say that the Orioles had particularly good fastball command anyways.
So you know, obviously it was one series, and we can't go making sweeping pronouncements. Well, we could, but it would be even dumber than usual, just based on a sample size of 3 games, or if you're Chris Davis, 2 games, or if you're a bullpen pitcher, fewer. But yeah, there's definitely stuff we would like to see looking better. But so who? So obviously a small sample size again. But who did you feel looked good in the first 3 games?
Well, I was impressed. And am impressed with Deaza and Snyder as sort of the corner outfielders. Both of them looked good at the plate, made solid contact, worked counts. Especially Snyder, he seemed to be more patient, one of the more patient hitters on the team right now, sort of not swinging at bad pitches. And I was impressed with him too, because he also, he hit that double where Steve Pierce was thrown out by 50 feet, but not actually thrown out.
That was one of the more absurd plays I have really remember
I
ever seen.
Like,
if you watch enough baseball games, you will still see something you've never seen before. Because, I mean, that was a play that only happened with replay, because the umpire was in such a position that he literally had no idea whether...
Yeah.
Steve Pierce was safe or whether Steve Pierce was out. Like, he was completely blocked off from seeing whether there was in fact a tag. And I don't know that he really cared, because Steve Pierce was out by like half the length of the base path.
Yeah.
But then
the
catcher got lazy and Steve Pierce snuck his foot in, which was pretty awesome.
It's a pretty crazy play. I mean, you know, you see it. You see a lot of the Orioles guys do it, and in this age of replay, you have to. You got, you know, they they keep the glove on until the play is called or the ump calls time. You know, you got to do stuff like that now where you didn't have to before.
Right, because if they overslide, and you know they overslide, even if the ump is lazy and doesn't call it, and but if there's video evidence and your video guy sees it, well, get him going. Yeah. Get him out. Get him out of there.
Yeah, you know, it's important, stuff like that, and it just let him slip his mind. But yeah, on that play, Snyder hit a double off of the Rays' lefty reliever. And one of the things with Snyder has been his struggle against lefties, so it's nice to see him hit a ball hard against a lefty.
As much as one of the questions for the Orioles is, well, how are Snyder and Deaza going to be as, like, Markakis replacements? You really couldn't have had a better first series from that duo.
No. I mean, yeah, you couldn't have asked for more than what they gave you. Both are giving good at-bats. Deaza seems like a pretty good leadoff hitter right now, for at least when it's a righty starter. Kind of interested to see what they'll do when they face Burley with the lefty.
So, I mean, obviously, again, keep in mind the qualification. It's only been three games, but your Orioles hits leaders after that series are Deaza, Snyder, and Pierce, Pierce only had three, but he hit two homers, so he's awesome. But anyway, I mean, if that's you're hoping these guys can kind of do some replacing of the offense, like, you know, okay, well, that was a good way to get started there.
Definitely. And, you know, Pierce is definitely another guy who's looked great. He hit the, you know, like we had talked about last time, he can hit a fastball, but he actually, one of his second home run came on like a, I think it was a curveball inside. All of his home runs are against righties, which is another good thing for him. So he hasn't really showed signs of slowing down quite yet, but as you said, it's been 12 at bats.
I mean, you know, the whole rest of the season awaits, and Blue Jays starters await this weekend, and Blue Jays relievers and whatever. But, you know, better to see a good start than not. As Ryan Flaherty managed to avoid starting off a third straight season 0-17 by hitting a home run in that first series.
Yeah.
His only hit, but nonetheless, he avoided the 0-17 start.
Yeah, started 1-for-10 instead.
One for 10. One hit in 11 plate appearances. He also got a walk.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I mean, Flaherty with the bat is constant target of derision, but no, he's a good player to have on your bench.
He's got the pop, and you never know when it's going to strike.
That's true. But yeah, even in the, I think Snyder's are pretty good in the field too. He seems to have some quick feet. He probably needs to learn how to communicate a little better.
We had the synchronized role play with him and Adam Jones, where they almost bumped into one another and just managed to roll on the turf exactly the same way in different directions.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. And he also had, I think, at least a couple of times when Scope would go out for a pop fly, Snyder would run in and both of them would look like they weren't going to stop for a while. So, but I guess they figured it out. But,
I mean, these are the kinks you got to iron out. Cause I mean, well, you would say, well, why didn't you do that in spring training? But let's get real. Spring training. I mean, I don't even know how many times Snyder and Scope were in the same game in spring training.
True.
Let alone.
It seemed like Snyder didn't play a lot.
No.
So, but yeah, you know, I mean, like you said, it's stuff you work on, stuff you get used to when you're actually playing in real games.
Yeah, I trust that will get sorted out, and you know, Wayne Kirby will not allow that kind of shenanigans to continue for long. He'll straighten him out.
Yeah. Also, first couple of games, the defense has looked really, really pretty good again. That double play last night was in the first inning was highlight worthy from especially from Scope.
Scope just has a cannon instead of an arm.
And I mean,
and it's great.
One of the things I like seeing on that play at the very least is last year he struggled with those transfers sometimes, trying to be like too quick or something like that. But last night, I mean, his transfer was half a second and it was on point. His throw was perfect. So, you know, if he can get better and iron out those edges on his fundamentals, I mean, you know, he can hit 220 the rest of his life and he'll still be a positive player for the Orioles.
I mean, especially since it's second base, it's like, well, you're not expecting a lot from your offense there. I mean, you know, whatever, offense is offense, but I think, like you said, he can be a positive second baseman even if he doesn't hit so great,
Yeah.
if he's continuing to make plays like that.
Yeah. And then that I think it was Flaherty last night who backed up Jones's throw, and who's a terrible, terrible throw, and then got Jennings at second, and that really limited the damage, kept it only to one run in that eighth, which, you know, obviously they weren't able to come back, but minimizing the damage helps.
And of course, Manny Machado announced he wants his gold glove back.
Yes.
With his play. I mean, it was ultimately in a losing effort, but just the absolutely ridiculous play. I hope you've seen video, you out there listening. It was just a grounder that he kind of had to stumble to field and was like picking up from the carpet in foul territory and fired to first and still got the out. Only because the runner stepped short of first base, which I don't see every day either. And that was overturned on replay. Or no, that one they called him out. Because that was one of those plays
yeah.
where the ump was just like, well, that was so awesome, we have to make it an out. But then then it turned out he never actually touched the base, which I don't think the ump knew that. I'm not going to give the ump that credit, but he got it right nonetheless.
He did. I feel like that play is just going to be called the Manny Machado in coming years. He's so good at going into foul territory and gunning guys out.
Like, there's that one you just remember that they always would talk about from Brooks Robinson throwing out Lee May or whatever in the 1970 World Series. And sure enough, that was an impressive play. But Manny just does it, like, all the time.
Yeah.
And it's not even a surprise anymore.
No.
We've now seen it, you know, over, I mean, this will be parts of the fourth season where we've seen him do things like that.
Yeah, I mean, he's great. I mean, there's really nothing, especially in the field. I mean, it's so smooth. Hands, arm, range is great. I mean, you can't ask for anything more of a third baseman.
How weird is it that this is already Machado's part of his fourth big, like, season he spent in the big leagues?
That is pretty. Is it? I guess.
Yeah, because he's in 12, 13, 14, 15.
Yeah.
It's his fourth.
Yeah.
Fourth season.
Wow.
He was a big league player. I saw something that got flagged on Twitter earlier by Jeff Long from Baltimore Sports and Life that Machado has only had like something like two plate appearances in either his minor or major league career where the pitcher was younger than him.
Yeah,
and
I
that was
see that.
When he was on rehab in high A.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. You know, I mean, yeah, it was a ballsy move to call him up in 2012, and I mean, he earned it, and he's earned his playing time since.
Yeah, he has not given the Orioles any reason to regret that decision.
And then he's looked decent at the plate so far. Hasn't had great results, but he had a couple of nice line drives to center field over the last couple of games. You know, they've been caught, but
at least he got a sac fly RBI for his trouble on one of those. And I mean, because what is the thing now? It's all about the exit velocity off the bat or whatever. And if you're making
sure.
hard contact, it's eventually going to come and hit the, well, if you're in the trap, it's the carpet, but, you know.
Man, I hate that stadium.
It will come down to whatever the playing surface is and not into a glove eventually.
True. True, yeah. And, you know, his swing's looking good. His patience hasn't quite been there yet, but we'll see how it goes. He hasn't played live baseball in quite some time other than spring training, which hardly counts.
It does hardly count. So those are our positives, and unfortunately there were some that were not so positive, but of course we can write it off. It's okay. It was a small sample size. It's only been three games. But there were some people who are going to need to turn it around as the sample size expands. Chris Davis, I think, is one of them. Obviously going hitless in his first two games, a little bit less than ideal. We can hope he's maybe just trying a little too hard in his much ballyhooed return from the suspension.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he said he was a little nervous. There were some quotes out there today, even that he's nervous for the sort of home opener. He didn't want to miss that. So we'll see. Hopefully he settles in right. I mean, he was taking some decent hacks, but, you know, especially last night, and he wasn't the only one, but he was swinging about a foot over those Odorizzi splitters. And, I mean, you just, after seeing what happened last year, you would just like to see him get off to a decent start and get a hit here or there just to sort of ease your mind a bit.
Hopefully by the end of the Blue Jays series, he can just, like, collect at least one homer.
Yeah.
Just to feel like, okay, Chris Davis is back. Of course, it was supposed to be the opposite field power was really what was holding him back. And he did have a couple opposite field homers in spring training, if I remember right. But whoever knows with spring training homers, right? Because you never know what's a jet stream homer unless you were, like, watching it or listening to it and the announcer said something about it.
Yeah. And, I mean, even just hitting balls in the air the other way is a good sign. And he actually did hit one pretty well last night to, like, the wall, basically, the other way, as Snyder did as well. But, you know, that, you know, he just, with three strikeouts and seven plate appearances so far, it's hard to, you know, it's just hard right now to envision him being any better than he was last year, but it's just so early. It's just so hard to, you want to read into everything and you just can't read into anything for a while.
Basically every team in baseball is striking out a million times now. So the Orioles are not alone there, but yeah, like Deaza, as good as he was, he also struck out six times in 14 plate appearances. That's a little absurd. Flaherty, five strikeouts in 11 plate appearances is also not exactly what you'd like to see.
But, I mean, if you're, even though the Rays, their starting pitching staff is injured and they touched up their starting pitching staff pretty well, they still got a good bullpen. I mean, so, and that's where, except for last night, the Rays racked up a lot of strikeouts on with their relief pitchers. So, I don't know, you know. It's just for now. But on the offensive side, other than Davis, I didn't have much complaints. I mean, Jones doesn't look great, but he hit a couple of balls hard. And it just, I feel like with Adam Jones, just like he's going to end up hitting 280.
Yeah, he'll get it going. I'm not worried. I'll never be worried about Jones.
Yeah. It's like with Davis, you have prior reasons to be worried. Yeah.
When you're coming off of 198 season, 198 batting average anyway,
every strikeout hurts a little more.
Yeah, you want to see some evidence that's not going to continue another year.
Actually, Jones only struck out once that series.
That's a moral victory for him, even if he only got one hit.
Yeah, he's putting the ball in play. That's what he does, right? What he's trying to do.
Unfortunately, other people who get the demerits are pretty much all three starters.
Yes.
Probably, like, well, Wei and Chen was the only one who had the ERA come out looking bad. And, you know, when you give up four hits and two walks and four and a third, that's going to happen. Miguel Gonzalez managed to only give up one run in five and two thirds, despite having five walks, including, as you mentioned, the last two that he faced, he walked and then he was lifted. And then Mattis kept the walking going with two more walks.
Oh, man.
Tillman walked three and six and two thirds, which is all. You can deal with it. At least he wasn't giving up a ton of hits, but that's more than you'd like to see.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, just it didn't seem like anyone's fastball command, including a lot of the guys coming out of the bullpen, was all that great. And, you know, something that needs to be tightened up. You know, you've seen those guys all command their fastball better. So, again, there's hope that it'll happen, you know, as we get deeper and deeper into the season. But, you know, this first month or two is a lot of games in the AL East, so they all matter, even though it's April and May. And, you know, Tillman was good, and even Gonzalez, you know, it was all weak contact, which is especially with those two guys. Like,
yeah, he only allowed three
contact
hits in that time, so that's pretty good. And, of course, this was the Rays, who are not expected to have good offense. So
True.
Like, we don't know how they're going to do against, for instance, the Blue Jays have Edwin Encarnacion and Jose Bautista and whatnot.
Yes. So it'll be a different test against those guys. And
how will they do against the David Ortizes of the world?
True. So we'll see. But, you know, I thought Tillman looked decent, but again, the fastball command wasn't there, but he was able to sort of get around it and finish off hitters. That was the problem Gonzalez and Chen had. They just couldn't finish off guys, and they just get 3-2 and foul and foul and foul and either strike them out or then give up a hit or walk them. So, I mean, it was just they had trouble finishing off at bats, which maybe that's just pesky Rays hitters, but you would have liked to see them be a little more, I don't know, tight with it.
I think that's fair to say. And, I mean, you know, that those kinds of problems, especially for Chen, it's like always the problem. Is guys just keep fouling it off, and sometimes there's guys he just can't put away.
Yeah. You know, it's if Chen's got one weakness, it's that he doesn't really have that swing and miss pitch. You know, he can locate his fastball enough where he'll get some strikeouts with it here and there, but, like, his slider and curve and changeup are all just kind of like stuff that's slower than his fastball. They're not really all that great pitches in my mind.
Speaking of guys who are walking too many, Kevin Gausman in his first relief appearance of the year walked two and also gave up a homer, which, you know, that's not what you want to do if you're walking guys. Then you also give up a homer.
Give up a long home run.
Less than ideal.
Kiermaier won to dead center.
Crushed it to deep center, yep.
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, Gausman was pumping it. He got up 100, 101, struck out four. He looked good coming out of the bullpen.
It seems like every team just has relievers who are throwing 100 now, so I guess if Gausman is going to be in the bullpen, at least that gives the Orioles that kind of guy, that kind of weapon, you know, if he can command his fastball when he's throwing 101.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, I know a lot of people are mad and a little bit myself about Gausman starting in the bullpen, but, you know, he is a weapon to bring out. And, you know, I could see sort of the logic in limiting his innings at the beginning of the year and then, you know, exposing him more and more to lineups and adverse situations through the bullpen, sort of get him to develop a little bit, but at some point this year he's got to be inserted into the starting rotation.
Yeah, I assume, well, I hope they have a plan to make that a smooth transition as possible, but in the meantime it's just like, man,
yeah,
what are you doing? I mean, that will be even more so the case if, like, either like a Bud Norris or especially Ubaldo has a rough April.
Yeah.
Then it'll just be like, well, we could have Gausman doing this instead.
Yeah, I mean, every bad Ubaldo start is just like going to increase the amount of screaming tenfold. You know, it's just, I see the logic in trying to get Ubaldo to be a good pitcher for you, but, you know, we'll see how it goes. I think with Gausman and Gonzalez being the guys with options, I think you could see both of them sent down to the minors multiple times this year just to bring up a bullpen arm for 10 days and have the other one slide into the rotation spot and then just keep flipping and flopping them, and, you know, and having made like each of them getting 20 starts or something.
I could see it. Dan Duquette is not above. And, I mean, as we will have talked about before and we'll talk about again, it's like he can't help himself. He's just addicted to roster moves.
Yeah.
I think the signature, well, there's probably more than one, but a signature Dan Duquette move is when you get to August, the end of August, and he pulls the option a guy to the Gulf Coast League.
Oh, that's my favorite.
The day before the Gulf Coast League season ends or whatever, so that way That way, when rosters expand, he can call them right back up right away because the Gulf Coast League season is over. I don't know that anyone else has ever done that.
Yeah,
he's done
it's
it.
So
to,
great.
He's done it to Chen for two consecutive years now, I think.
Yeah, It's just like, here, go stay in a hotel somewhere. And
do they even send him to Florida? Do they have to even pretend like they're going to send him to Florida? I don't know.
They probably like buy a plane ticket and then just throw it away.
Yeah.
Just so they can show MLB something.
Yeah.
I mean, and then
so that's,
also
he does that just kind of stuff. All
yeah. And then the All-Star break, he'll send guys down.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Bring them back up. He loves it. He loves it.
He did that to Norris last year. He did that to Tillman the year before.
I think he did it to and Gonzalez last year, too.
It's kind of got to suck for those guys because it's like you're probably looking forward to the All-Star break the whole first half of the year, and then here's the GM on the phone. Well, I don't know. Maybe it's his agent, but whatever. Like, no, you're going to go hang out in Bowie while the rest of the team goes and does whatever they do on the All-Star break.
Yeah, well, they can suck it up.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm sure they managed to get over it, but for a day or two, that's probably irksome.
I'm sure. You have any thoughts on our best friend, Brian Mattis?
I don't know that my thoughts are airable on a family program.
Yeah, I was certainly screaming at my TV last night.
Longtime listeners and readers of me just know I reached a point where I just... Well, I mean, I don't know. Like, because he was very good in 2012 once they moved him into the bullpen, to my surprise. And, you know, part of why the Orioles ended up making the run in the second half of that season was, well, they suddenly decided, oh, you know, we're not going to keep throwing Brian Mattis into the starting rotation. Here, now you're the lefty reliever. And then, you know, he was pretty crucial in that role. Got the key, the key double play from Josh Hamilton in the wild card game, for instance.
True.
Although, of course, then he later broke our hearts again with the Raul Ibanez extra innings.
We've had two
homer.
Podcasts, and you mentioned it twice.
I know,
now,
it
Mark.
Won't be the last. It won't be the last time. I'm not over it yet. I'm never going to be over it. Much like I will never be over the Jeffrey Meyer home run,
yeah.
I will never be over Raul Ibanez in Game 3 of the 2012 ALDS.
Yeah, I mean, Mattis is just, he's a frustrating pitcher to watch because, I mean, last night when he had the righties up and he just refused to throw inside to them. And, I mean, and he can't paint the outside corner. And, you know, even if you can... Even if you have that kind of control, you can't just keep doing that. You know, a good hitter can hit a fastball in the outside corner if he knows it's going there. And, you know, if he can't pitch inside to righties, then he'll never get them out. And, you know, then you just got a loogie. And, you know, with all the other people in the bullpen and a three-man bench, you know, why are you keeping this guy?
It gets pretty frustrating. And I just... I don't know.
I don't either.
I fully admit that he has frustrated me long ago, and I'm just I have reached the point where I have no more patience. I probably reached that at some point in the 2011 season when he was continually
the worst starting pitcher ever.
Like, and in fact, I've come up with something from that his performance that season, and I just call it the Brian Mattis test. And the test is this. Is your ERA lower when you ended your outing than when it started? And if it's lower, you pass the test. And if it's higher, you failed the Brian Mattis test. And I call it the Brian Mattis test because his 2011 season, he started 12 games. And in 11 of those 12 games, he had a higher ERA than when he started that day. Now, so, I mean, if you're a pitcher with an ERA who's at like 4, and if you end up with an ERA of like 4.08, it's like whatever. But when you for instance pull a 5.60 ERA and turn that into a 6.85 ERA, or take a 6.85 ERA and turn that into an 8.77 ERA, like it's increasingly improbable. Now he went from the 8.77 and did lower his ERA that next start. By giving up six runs in 6 2/3 innings to lower it to an 8.63 ERA. capped off He had a 10.68 ERA going into his last start of the year. Gave up 6 runs in 5 innings and ended up with a 10.69 ERA. You couldn't even get it lower than 10.68. And that's why it's the Brian Mattis test. And that's why I...
It's a good test.
And that's why I just... even when he was good as a reliever for a little while, you know, 2013... He was obviously pretty good as a loogie, but that all of that is just bubbling under the surface. And you know, he was supposed to be the top of the rotation pitcher with 4 above average pitches, and he was like the number 4 overall prospect in baseball. And this is the number 5 according to Baseball America, as I'm looking at it right here now. And I mean. It's and instead, you know, here we are. He's in his next to last year before he's a free agent, unless they non-tender him after this year, which honestly I was kind of hoping would happen over this past off season.
I thought they were going to do it the last 2 years, to be honest.
And here he still is, and I don't know what to make of him anymore. When he's good, great, but just when he's bad, he just seems so bad. And I don't know why. I don't know why. Why did he ever become this instead of what they said?
You know, I don't know either. I think a lot of it's probably just draft status, hype. You know.
Yeah. Well, what is that one of those cliches they say? Is once a first round pick, always a first round pick. Yeah. And those guys just keep getting chances. And the Orioles aren't the only team where that's the case, I'm sure.
No, not at all. But you know, I don't see it. I don't see it with them. And I think one of the best pieces of evidence you have for that is the, you know, like I think we had talked about a little last week that the Cubs had turned down trading for their third catcher for him. You know, if the Cubs can't believe they can rebuild a pitching prospect, then I don't think anyone does.
Being as the Cubs did this very thing with Jake Arrieta.
Yes, they did.
I'm not even mad about that because I just feel like, and I mean, maybe this isn't rational, but I just feel like, if there is such a thing as a change of scenery guy, I think Jake Arrieta was one of those guys. And I
do too.
I'm not mad that he's succeeding there. In fact, I always liked him, and I am happy to see him be successful. And the reason I'm not mad is because I don't believe he ever would have done that here.
No. I honestly don't either. He's kind of this guy that needed it, like you said. I mean, there's no way to, you know, I can't prove that or whatever, but you know, he seemed like a guy that was always really hard on himself, and he kind of just needed to be in a different situation. And in that year, 2013, I mean, when they traded him, they were in the thick of the playoff race, and there's no way you could have kept a guy like how he was performing on that team. You know, they were going to get rid of Arrieta and Strope sooner rather than later, and they got something for him.
Although, if that year had gone better, that trade would probably sting a little less. And
yeah, I mean, you know.
Feltman was a rental, but you couldn't just give up on that season, which I think is fine.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, we can all, you know, back and forth on Twitter and pretend like everything's for the future, but I like the team the past couple of years of trying to win games now. It's much more fun.
And as Orioles fans well know, you can't always just think, well, we can punt and then we'll get some prospects and then we'll be better in a couple years. Because sometimes your couple years is 14 freaking years.
Yeah. And sometimes those prospects are Brian Mattis.
And sometimes those prospects are Brian Mattis. Sometimes they're everyone Sid Thrift ever traded for.
Yeah.
The best player he managed to trade for was like 29-year-old Melvin Mora, who wasn't even really a prospect, 28, whatever age he was when they traded for him. He wasn't a prospect by the time he was acquired by the Orioles.
But a good hit. That's a typical, you know, Dan Duquette type pickup right there.
Yeah, you're right. It would have been. That's very true. But all those other trades didn't work out. So, you know, there's something to be said for, well, you got the draft and whatnot, but, I mean, obviously, you can't mortgage everything on winning 1 year, but you can't be sure, well, we'll just have mostly the same team and we'll be back next year. Especially a year like this year, where there's 11 pending free agents and you know, varying roles of importance, but it, whatever, for good or ill, it's going to be a very different Orioles team.
Definitely. I know we had talked about it a little bit before we started recording, but you know, with so many free agents and the potential for so many qualifying offers, it's going to be interesting going in to this trade deadline to see where the team is at and what they do with their players. You know, if they're out of it, do they trade, or do they just hold on to them to get the draft picks? Or, you know, do they, if they're in it, which I think they will be, you know, how much of their minor league system are they willing to give away for just this year?
Do they even have any guys left that they can give away to actually get quality?
I think a lot of the guys they have left, they want to try to keep.
Yeah, so. I guess, I mean, you know, I'm sure everybody will be asking about Hunter Harvey, for instance. I don't think they will be willing to get rid of him even for a, you know, a crucial kind of deal, the way they were willing to trade Eduardo Rodriguez to get Andrew Miller, for instance. I can't imagine that.
If like they weren't going to trade someone like Bundy or Harvey or Gausman last year, when they were, you know, on their way to winning 96 games, I wouldn't see why they would do it this year, kind of thing.
So on kind of on the subject of draft picks, that ties in to the Ryan Webb trade, which I did promise I would bring up again, and here we are about 40 minutes later, and we are going to talk about that. So the Orioles, so I'm sure you have heard by now, the Orioles traded Ryan Webb, who they had designated for assignment, and a minor league catcher, Brian Ward, who was one of those guys who, like the Steve Molesky's of the world, would always rave about their defense. But, I mean, okay, for real, he was 29, and I think he had played like 65 games above Double A.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the best you could hope for is, well, maybe he would be the next Caleb Joseph, but they already have Caleb Joseph, so we don't need the next Caleb Joseph at this time.
No. And Ward's not even close to as good of a hitter as Joseph is.
Yeah.
He's straight up all defense. And, you know, from talking and from seeing and talking to some people like Tucker Blair last year, you know, he used to tell me that he thought Brian Ward might have been the best defensive catcher in the organization. You know, he was that good, but he can't hit, you can't hit. And that's why they kept him in the minors, because he was so good with the young pitchers that, you know, it's almost like a development thing, but at some point he's just not worth it anymore. And, you know, if he's a trade piece, then so be it.
Tucker Blair, for those who don't know, was a compatriot of Alex's at Orioles Nation, and now he writes for the Baseball Prospectus publication. So he is kind of a serious business in the prospect of value
dropping
world.
Name dropping.
And Alex knew him back when.
Yeah.
Brian Tucker Ward, six minor break. League seasons, 657 OPS total.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You know, so he seems like he's like a good organizational guy to have, but if he's going to be a piece in a trade, then it's whatever. And we were, the Orioles were going to lose Ryan Webb anyways, so.
Yeah. So the Orioles are also trading to the Dodgers their competitive balance pick, which was in the competitive balance B round, which means it's between the second round and the third round of the draft. Number 74 overall was that pick. So if they hadn't traded this pick, which, by the way, these are the only picks you can trade, the competitive balance picks, they have like a lottery. And there's like, I believe there's 12 teams who are eligible, and there's 10 picks, five between the first round and second round, five between the second round and third round. So the Orioles got in the B round, 74 overall, and they decided to trade that pick in this trade. So probably that means that was the thing they had to give up to get the Dodgers to pay Webb's salary.
Yeah.
Because the Orioles were on the path of where they were just going to end up releasing Webb, and they would then pay him this year's salary, which I think is $2.75 million. To sit on the couch.
Basically. And to either get picked up by another team and paid league minimum, where they pick up the rest, I think, is how it works.
Yeah, they pick up the prorated league minimum. So this way, the Orioles are off the hook for that money, but they lose that pick. So they were going to be set up to get four of the first 74 picks, which, Yeah, you know, that sounds pretty good. Although their highest pick is what, 26 overall? So it's not like you're getting, you know, you're not getting well, we've moved on from the days where the Orioles and Orioles fans are drooling over, you know, the fourth to sixth best names in the draft and knowing you're going to pick one of those guys that falls to you. It's more about finding the Hunter Harveys of the world and having them turn into better prospects than, you know, mid-late first round picks.
Yes.
But so they still get three of the first 68 picks, which isn't too
Yeah.
shabby. So
No.
the slot value of that 74 overall pick is $827,000, which is a non-trivial amount. But even with that missing, they still will have to spend, I believe, about $6.8 million on draft picks.
Yeah. Which I mean, you know, and that's a lot, and it was good, but you know, trading that draft pick, you know, that's a good amount of money you could use to maybe draft an overslot guy and work him in there where maybe, you know, he's better than the 26 overall pick.
Right, you could have, for instance, picked a guy who would sign for 100,000, and then you have 700,000 extra dollars to make on your 26 overall pick,
Yeah.
to maybe get a guy who's fallen for signability reasons or whatever.
Which I'd like to say that the system as currently constituted is insane and makes little to no sense. But yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, they basically sold their draft pick, and I'm not sure they're in the position right now that they should be selling draft picks just to not pay Ryan Webb. I mean, you already had it budgeted. You knew you're gonna have to pay him 2.75 million. Why are you giving away a draft pick just to not pay him that
I
money
mean, and
unless.
especially if you think about it, they already escaped some money this year when Sook Min-Yoon, I apologize if I pronounced that wrong, when he just decided to peace out from the North American continent
Yeah.
and void any obligation the Orioles might have towards him.
So I mean, like, obviously no move occurs in a vacuum, you know? So, you know, if this 2.5 million or 2.75 million comes around the trade deadline, it gives the Orioles a little more money to acquire somebody, you know, good.
And maybe
But
it will be, because I think one of the things that helped them last year is they were a team that had some money available to pick up some guys at the deadline.
true. And maybe, you know, and that'll help. But it just seems odd. And you know, I even to be honest, I like the guys they got back. I think it's good value for someone like Webb, and I'm sure that draft pick sort of increased the people they got back, but they didn't exactly get back anything special. I mean, the hope for the two Ben Rowan and Chris O'Brien is they're probably somewhere between the 20th and 25th man on your roster.
So Ben Rowan is like a sidearmer guy.
Yeah, he's a 26-year-old sidearmer who's put up actually pretty great numbers in the minors, and has been decent in the higher minors as well, but he's basically spent his entire time there. So, you know, that makes you wonder a bit.
I saw something on Twitter about his fastball goes 80.
Yeah.
So you got a real small margin of error
That's true.
there.
Very
But
true.
you know, whatever, it's worth a shot. Like, because again, they were already gonna have to either pay Webb or not get Webb, because he wasn't gonna go to Norfolk.
I know apparently they had been looking at Rowan in the offseason about bringing him in, but the Dodgers ended up getting him. And you know, I mean, you know, he's got a 1.85 ERA career in the minors. Looking at some of this stuff, you know, there's this website, minorleaguecentral.com, for those of you interested. They sort of collect ground ball and line drive data from just like the reports from the minor league games because those have like the play-by-play sheets. You know, and so you can get some ground ball percentages, which is, you know, can be very, I would say, iffy. But, you know, he gets, according to this, he gets like 65% ground balls in the minor leagues, which, you know, he's probably a ground ball pitcher at the very least, is what you could say. So, you know, he seems to get good results. He could, again, you know, if he's a sixth, seventh guy in a bullpen, that's about the best thing you could hope for him.
There is a chance he could be something, and now there's the Orioles will get the first crack at if he becomes something.
And O'Brien, you know, from what I saw from the, as you know, both of us like to say, the scouting industrial complex. He's like a backup catcher, basically.
Switch hitting catcher.
Yeah, good defense. He had a good year hitting wise last year in Double A. Had a 773 OPS in 114 games. I mean, that's pretty good for like a 23, 24-year-old at Double A.
And so, probably he'll be heading to Bowie, and we'll see how he does there.
Yeah.
Chris O'Brien, the Orioles press release told me, was the son of former major leaguer Charlie O'Brien, but I don't know who the heck that is. So.
No, I saw some vague old beat writer tweets knowing who he was, but I don't.
I don't know. Let's see. Charlie O'Brien had a big league career spanning from 1985 to 2000. Wow. Played nine games for the Montreal Expos in 2000 at the age of 40.
Wow.
He was,
age 40 for a catcher?
He was a catcher himself. And over his 15-year career, he had 2,560 plate appearances and a 656 OPS. So yeah. I guess the son and the father, probably roughly the same caliber of player, although the younger O'Brien will be lucky to get such a long big league career.
So maybe the Orioles see more in these guys than other people do. And honestly, in all likelihood, the 74th draft pick will turn out to be minor league filler. But yeah, it just seems like an odd deal to make just to save money, which sucks. I mean, you know, just I'm a fan. I don't care if you save money. I want better players.
Tying back into our pending free agents, of course, you are probably aware that the Orioles have a catcher who will soon no longer be on the Orioles.
True.
And they also have a sidearm reliever who will probably soon no longer be on the Orioles. Although I feel
switch hitting catcher that will
switch.
Soon
that's
no
true.
Be.
Now, obviously, Chris O'Brien is not ever going to be what Matt Wieters is, or certainly what we hoped Matt Wieters would be. But you know, somebody has to be the backup catcher, and maybe if Wieters goes, and they just decide, well, you know what, Caleb Joseph, we're just going to have him catch 100 games a year. And somebody still needs to catch the other 62, and that somebody is probably not going to be Steve Clevenger. Sorry to all of the Pigtown partisans out there. Of course, the Orioles have annoyed Steve Clevenger.
Oh yeah.
With having him on the roster for one day and then optioning him, in much the same way as I believe they ticked off Ryan Webb by having him on the roster for about 6 hours.
Yeah. Well, as Dan Duquette for you, huh?
Yeah, as we like to say on Camden Chat, he is the Honey Badger GM, because as you probably remember from that video, Honey Badger does not give a, well, we don't say that on Camden Cast, but you know what the word there is there.
Yes.
And really, that's a very good description of Dan Duquette, because he doesn't care.
No, he does not. I love the HBGM whatever abbreviation in the comments.
Yeah, we do have that one on Camden Chat. He's the Honey Badger GM, the HBGM, because really he just doesn't care, and that's what lets him do the Gulf Coast League maneuver. It's what lets him do the All Star break maneuver, and it's all of the same cloth. That's just that's what's going to happen when you're on the margins of the Orioles. Sorry to say.
Yeah, if you got an option. I think that's the most important thing about the guys they picked up. They have options.
Yeah, I mean, they're not even on the 40, man. They haven't even started burning their options.
Yeah. I think Rowan's got two, and O'Brien's probably got all three of his left.
Yep. So there's I don't know. They if they get something out of those guys, then great. But yeah, I also share your just general concern. I don't want them to just be giving up on draft picks, especially after last year where they didn't get to pick until number 90 overall. And if you look at the Delmarva Shorebirds roster, for instance, you look at that roster and you can see this is a team that didn't have a first or second round pick last year. Because really the most interesting name on there, the only real vague interesting name on there is really Jomar Reyes, who is a big 18-year-old dude who's playing third base, and he mashed in the Gulf Coast League as like a 17-year-old last year, which, you know, that's an impressive feat, but he's a long way from the big leagues.
Yes. Yes, he is. And, you know, it's being first time full season ball. It's going to be a make or break year for him, you know, in the eyes of the prospect ranking world. You know, he's still young, but having so little sort of track record, it's going to be, you know, right now it's just people see he's young and tall and big and can hit the ball really far. So hopefully he can do that in the game. Otherwise, on Delmarva, you're kind of looking Jonah Heim, which, you know, is a catcher they seem to like. And pitching-wise, you have last year's third-rounder Brian Gonzalez, but otherwise it's relatively meek.
Yeah, it's a lot of guys who were, like, college draftees last year, and they were on Aberdeen, and then now they're just kind of getting bumped up to Delmarva because, I mean... Here's the thing about the low minor leagues. You got to have somebody play like left field in your low A team. And it's not necessarily a guy whose long-term future is in professional baseball.
No. You're just trying to find somebody. And you're trying to find someone that still wants to play. Usually, you know, guys like that, like the Orb guys, they tend to be like good makeup guys. You know, they're not going to bum out the clubhouse or anything like that. And, you know, they're good guys to have in your organization, but yeah, the Orioles have a lot of them, especially at Delmarva.
You move up to Frederick, and it's looking a little bit more interesting because I feel like once Hunter Harvey's leg mends, he's going to be there.
Yeah.
And Chance Cisco is definitely going to be there, and Cisco is a catching prospect who won the batting title for the South Atlantic League, the Delmarva Shorebirds League, last year, which... pretty impressive, especially since he was a high school draftee from 2013.
Also have Josh Hart playing center. He was the, I think, second round pick a couple years back.
That was the competitive balance pick they didn't trade.
That's right.
From
That's right.
From 2013.
Yeah, and he was rated high by some people, rated low by some people. So he's an athlete guy. I know, actually, to say his name again, Tucker Blair, over Baseball Prospectus, he likes Josh Hart. He thinks he's got a pretty good like back control, and he's thinking it'll show up here sometime soon, hopefully. So
it's your toolsy outfielder with potential, but
yeah,
maybe he turns into nothing kind of story.
Maybe,
I believe.
Maybe not.
And of course, Josh Hart gave us the excellent anecdote of last spring training. When he didn't know who Frank Robinson was, and Buck Showalter made him write a report.
True.
About who is Frank Robinson.
That's a good one. And, you know, there's a couple interesting relievers, but the only another name, college guy, Drew Dosh, third baseman. I know he fell in the draft from a torn ACL or some other knee injury, I think. And so it's 'cause some people thought he'd go a little higher. And he had a pretty good batting average last year. He wasn't hitting for a ton of power, but he's another interesting guy, Frederick, to keep an eye on if you like to do that.
Bowie is where Dylan Bundy will be starting out. And well, I mean, they'll probably have Bundy there for as long as he's there because that's closer to Baltimore, so that's closer for them to do whatever. And, of course, I don't think the Orioles are the only team that kind of uses their double-A team to keep their hot prospects and then leaves, like, the veteran retreads for triple-A.
That's pretty much standard. I think that, you know, they have their 25 to 28, 29, 30-year-olds in triple-A because the life in triple-A can be a little bit easier on you. But, you know, in double-A, it's a lot more bus rides and stuff like that. So they'll tend to, and like, they'll just keep the higher prospects at that level and keep the sort of quad A guys at AAA for reasons like that. And there's obviously other reasons, but yeah, you got Dylan Bundy at Bowie. Parker Bridwell is another guy that scouts seem to love, but has yet to put it all together statistically, at the very least.
He's like the Jake Arrieta, if Jake Arrieta never actually made it up to the major leagues.
Yeah,
is what I get the impression from you, because he's just like always has these command problems, and then they really like his stuff, but whatever.
He'll give you like two or three starts a year where like, all right, this is it. This is the time where he turns it around, and then no. But people seem to like him. So, you know, as long as he's still in the organization, he's a guy to keep an eye on.
Parker Bridwell is one of those players I always root for, because I will occasionally look at the Camden Chat Twitter account, and sometimes you'll see people like with last names that are also of players, and it's like their mom. And Parker Bridwell's mom, like if you talk about him, she finds you. She might even just like hear this podcast, even if I don't mention his name in the post. No, probably not. But I see her like on on Twitter sometimes if you mention him in a tweet, and she will find it and favorite it, even if it's like 3 days later.
So, I mean, you know,
and I can never root against someone whose mom or wife or something is like so interested that they will find something that Camden Chat tweeted and they see it. It's a very human thing. But he's never quite put it together. But they keep bumping him up anyway just to see what happens.
Yeah, and, you know, as he gets older, if he wants to keep any prospect status, that's what he kind of needs to keep doing. So, you know, I'm not saying he can never do it, but, you know, the talent's there. He's just got to put it together. Other guys on Bowie you're looking at, I know there were some positive reports about Brandon Kline over the offseason. Apparently he had sort of, UVA is known for a certain type of delivery with their pitchers, which, again, I'm taking all this off of Twitter reports. I don't know anything about this. But he's increased his fastball velocity by, you know, Steve Molesky had reported sort of mid-90s. Some other people had reported high 90s. We'll see. Again, it'll be an interesting year for him at AA if that's the case.
Tim Barry and Zach Davies are both there, I believe, right? I don't know if
you
mentioned them already.
Yes, that's also true.
And Mike Yastrzemski also.
Yeah. I'm actually looking at the Bowie roster now. Yastrzemski, it'll be a big year for him, too. He put up great numbers last year, and, you know, people might not like him. He's a little short, but
I think
play.
His best-case scenario is he's like the next David Lowe.
Yeah, probably. But, you know, all he can do is go out and play and keep hitting well and playing defense. And, you know, someone's going to notice.
And I mean, also even if he's only David Lowe, like if they can grow their own David Lowe, that's better than having to trade for him, which they did when they got David Lowe. So, I mean, you still, you know, you need to kind of develop.
You need guys like that.
Or, for instance, have a Caleb Joseph just ready for your catastrophic injury to Matt Wieters. You've done well if you can do something with that.
I was just looking at the Bowie pitching, and they have a guy that's 6'10".
That's a tall drink of water.
I mean, I think he's 30, so I don't know if he's a prospect.
Probably
but...
not.
But
there's
man.
Somebody you can figure just really likes playing baseball.
Yeah. Wow. 6'10". That's a tall guy for a baseball team.
Yeah.
But yeah, otherwise
alliteratively named Ken Kasprek.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
That is good.
Ken with two N's on this page, I see. So keep that in mind if you're scoring at home. I will forget that name within 30 minutes of finishing this podcast.
As you should.
Yeah.
Lastly, Norfolk, again, I guess the rotation's semi-interesting.
Right, because that's where they've stashed Mike Wright and Tyler Wilson. They're in Norfolk, for instance.
Wilson actually was the home opener tonight, or the opener of the opening day for AAA. He did decent. He gave up a good amount of hits and runs, but he also struck out 7. So, you know, here and there, you never know with minor league stats like hits and runs, even just because you don't know how the defense behind him is playing or the field or anything like that.
Yeah, they always say don't scout the box scores in the minor leagues.
Yeah, well, that's all I can do.
That's all I can do, too.
Other pitchers, you know, Zach Davies is also there. TJ McFarland. Be interesting to see how long they keep him, maybe in like a rotation role there. Maybe they're trying to groom him to be a starter. Probably not, though.
Maybe they're crossing their fingers really hard and hoping he can be like the token lefty in the rotation next year after there's no more Chen.
Yeah, maybe.
Crossing position really player, hard.
Position player wise, there's like Christian Walker, basically, and Daryl Alvarez from a prospect standpoint.
And Alvarez, of course, is on the old side, but they're hoping he acclimates to to high minors.
I guess they also have the guy from the Rule 5 from the Red Sox last year that they traded for, Michael Almanzar.
Oh, yeah. Who I will also forget about 30 minutes after.
Also a good thing to do.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like we were talking about before, AAA is the land of the quad A journeyman. Been in baseball for a long, long time. And like Jason Nix.
It's hard to believe he is still around. Although he was on the freaking ALCS roster of the Royals last year.
That's true.
I don't remember if he was on their World Series roster also.
I don't know.
Of the unnecessary Y Nix clan. Also, Lance Nix with LAYNCE Nix.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Jason Nix is JAYSON Nix.
I see that. Yeah, I mean, you know, you want to keep playing baseball? Fine with me.
He did play in the World Series. He got 2 plate appearances, but no hits.
You got 2 plate appearances?
And that's why the Royals lost. No, it's not. But
still, I guess we got. Your boy, Nolan Rimehart.
Oh, yeah, Nolan. I will always root for Nolan. It's true. Talk about guys who I didn't even have to bring him up this podcast. That was you. There's a good chance Nolan will be mentioned on any given podcast.
But yeah, so that's it for the minors. But minor league season opened tonight. Just some names to watch here and there. And then we got the draft coming up in a couple of months, so...
Yeah, actually be not totally boring thinking about the draft this year, despite the pick they traded, because at least at number 26 overall, you can at least get a name who has some interesting things going for them, although you still...
Is their comp pick at, like, 30?
30-something. They have, like, the last 32? Comp pick, I think, because they had the best
34?
Record of the team that got them.
Yeah, it's something like that. So, I mean, they got a decent chance to pick up a couple good players there. And, you know, we'll see. You know, that's all you can really do with the draft. As little as I know about minor leagues, I know even less about the draft.
Yeah. It's not even worth thinking about, okay, who are the Orioles going to draft? Because especially when they're picking 26, there's just so many permutations. It's like, man, this could be anything. The best number 26 overall pick of all time, by the way, was Alan Trammell all the way back in 1976. The rules of the game are a little different since then. So
that's a pretty good one.
Yeah, but...
Who's the best 74th pick ever?
Oh, let's see. The best 74th pick ever. We go all the way back to the first year there was ever a draft. Greg Nettles.
We
also had David Cone at 74 in 1981.
Okay.
More recently, John Jay of the Cardinals was picked at 74 in 2006.
Yeah.
But then you've got a whole lot of guys who never made the majors.
Which doesn't surprise me.
Although
you get that.
Now debuting in the big leagues, Daniel Norris, the man who lives in a van by the river, also a 74th overall pick.
Did you hear that story enough times during the spring training?
I only heard it once, actually, because I read that article about it in, what was that, ESPN, the magazine?
Yeah.
I read the article, and that was cool. I didn't really watch any Blue Jays games, so I didn't hear people talking about it or anything. But
I saw it a lot, and it was, you know, cool, great, you live in a van.
But, so, like, you don't want to just give up on draft picks, but...
Yeah.
Any given draft pick, especially once you get out of the top 10, is a progressively lower historical success rate. Now, of course, we kind of got to toss out history a little bit because I think the new rules are going to make the better players be more likely to be at the top.
True.
There's not really going to be as much overslot signing in the third round these days.
Yeah.
But
that's accurate. We'll see. I mean, losing one, they still got the comp pick. I think it's still a good draft to be able to add talent. And with, as we've said multiple times, with 11 free agents coming, some of them are going to get qualifying offers, and they're going to have a lot of draft picks in 2016.
Yeah, the Orioles pick at 25th, excuse me, and 36th, and then 68th.
Yeah, so, you know, it's a good amount. And I think they pick another time in, like, the top 102 or something.
Oh, Alex, so. You know who was a 25th overall pick?
I don't.
Mike Trout.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that would be nice.
Again, as we pile back through history, our some of our successful 25th overall picks include Matt Cain, Chuck Knobloch, the immortal Bill Buckner, Matt Garza was a moderately successful 25th overall pick.
Yeah.
So I mean, well, obviously, certainly the Orioles are not going to pick the next Mike Trout at 25th overall, but. Again, historically, these are some of the good players, but then you have forgettable players who had negative BWAR or never made it to the big leagues. So, you know, it's a little bit of a crapshoot when you get down that far.
It is, you know, and yeah.
So we have rambled, and we are actually at the end of our a lot of time. Well, there's no a lot of time. I could just let it record forever, but you don't want to listen to us forever. And, you know, eventually we have to go do something else. Alex, do you have any final thoughts about the Orioles at this moment? It is 10:42 Eastern in the evening on April the 9th, 2015.
I'm just excited for the home opener. I got work off tomorrow. I'm going to relax, watch the game, and, you know, hopefully see a couple more wins.
I hope it doesn't rain. I'm not going to be able to go, but I don't want it to rain on all the people who are there.
I'm not going to
enjoy the outdoor, the mob at Pickles or Sliders, whatever that one is between Pickles and Sliders.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know. The forecast does not look great, but I think they're going to get the game in.
I'm sure they will. That's one advantage of a 3:10 start or 3:05 or whatever. You can, even if you push it back a couple hours, you're not going late into the night.
No.
I think if I have one thing I would like to see this weekend, I just want Ubaldo's first start to be at least okay.
That would be nice.
Just okay. Just even if it's like 6 innings, 3 earned runs, and he walks like 3-4 guys. Like even, you know, if that would be okay.
Yeah.
If he could get 6 innings and have the quote-unquote quality start, although, of course, that's your bare minimum quality start. Yeah. I would just like to see that. So, again, for the same reason I would like to see Chris Davis hit a home run this series, I just want to have something positive about someone about whom I'm very worried so that worry doesn't just keep rolling and rolling and rolling. So I guess I'll find out about my hope on Saturday.
Yeah.
And we'll see what happens about that. But hopefully the Orioles will take another 2 out of 3 and just keep finding ways to do that.
Keep doing that. You'll end up with a lot of wins.
That's the hope anyway. All right. So that's all we've got for tonight. So if you have not, please follow Camden Chat on Twitter. You can follow at Camden Chat, or you can go on Facebook. Facebook.com/CamdenChat, and on either of these you will find most or all of our articles linked, although I hope you will also bookmark us, CamdenChat.com, and check in throughout the day, especially weekdays. We've got stuff popping up all through the day. Weekends a little bit less, but there's always something being said about the Orioles on Camden Chat, and those are your best ways to find us. So keep an eye on them, and hopefully you'll find some awesome Orioles stuff about an awesome Orioles season as this year rolls along. And that's all we have for tonight. So for Alex Conway, I am Mark Brown. We are bringing you CamdenCast. This is Birdland, and we are out.